Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for June 8th. It's brought to you by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and with me is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy? How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fine, thank you. And just enjoying the nice, cool evening. Had a lot of baseball. A lot of interesting, weird, entertaining stuff going on this week. So, yeah, let's hop to it.
All right, a lot of news. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Oryx pitcher Alessandro Maestri. We're going to talk about Oryx and its change on the bench and answer some great listener questions. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so I was out at Tokyo Dome on Wednesday, and this was the day after Oryx manager Hiroshi Moriwaki stepped down or quit or was fired or whatever you want to call it. I'm not going to worry about the semantics. He's out. He left.
He's gone.
And so our buddy Glenn nearly got the timing on this one. He sent us a question in a few weeks ago, I think it was, about when Moriwaki was going to be gone. And this was my second time actually talking to players the day after a skipper had walked away in Japan. The first time was 2010 with the Swallows, so we won't bring that up.
No,
which we just did.
Thank you.
But
thank you.
We bring it up.
That's like my Brandon Dixon story. I said, you've done really well this season, except that one game. He says, well, I've been trying to push that out. I said, yeah, that one game in Sendai where you walked about a bazillion people. And he said, yeah, I've been trying to push that out of my mind. Thanks for reminding me.
Okay. All right. Well, I can tell you the atmosphere that day at Jingu was a little bit different when I went there after Shigeru Takada had stepped down. But that's because he had a presser late after the game.
Night,
and then in this case, Moriwaki had his presser early in the day before the game on Tuesday night, and I went to the game on Wednesday, so they had actually played
a game. Did you make the deadline?
I made it work for me. How's that?
Yeah, I'm not gonna utter any expletives or anything.
Okay, we don't have to. We're just moving right along.
Okay. Good. Okay. So, there's some coming to mind when we talk about that one.
Well, we're not talking about it. We're just moving along here.
Good. Get me out of here, Gibson.
All right. So, they didn't look to me. The Buffaloes didn't look to me like a group that had played poorly enough to cost a guy his job. They were still pretty much loose and they seemed very normal. And I talked to Maestri. Now, he's an Italian guy who spent a lot of time in Australia. So you'll hear his accent. You know, it is interesting, but it's not that bad. He asked after the interviews, like, you know, I hope my English was good enough. And I'm like, man, your English is perfect. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Yeah, it's better than mine.
I'll let him know that.
He knows in his heart it's better than mine.
All right,
his fastball is a hell of a lot better than mine, too.
Right. Yes, I know that. Everybody knows that. All right, so yeah. Maestri joined Oryx in 2012, and you know, he pitched in Italy, pitched for them, for that team in the WBC. He pitched in indie ball in Japan. He pitched in the Australian League.
Pitched in America as well in the minors.
Yep. He's been more effective with the Buffaloes as a reliever.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about that in the interview. He admits to liking to pitch out of the bullpen a little bit more. Anyway, the Moriwaki talk dominated the conversation, but we talked about the team and the approach for the rest of the season. And so we'll see you on the other side of the interview. So our guest this week is Alessandro Maestri. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me, finally.
Yeah, finally. This is the second week in a row we've had someone we tried to get on the show for a long time, and it's good to have you here. So obviously, on Tuesday, yesterday, the manager stepped away, and you've got some change. So what's your reaction to him leaving?
Actually, I kind of, felt bad. I liked the guy. I thought he did a great job in the past 2 years because, we were a team that didn't really won much before, and with him we got to the playoffs. I think he made some very good changes. This year somehow we started kind of weak, and, we just couldn't get, in a good rhythm. And I think it just pays. That's what, what he's paying, When the team doesn't do good, usually first guy to leave is the manager. So, I just kind of feel bad. I felt like he was a pretty good manager. I'm sure he's going to have other chances with other teams soon.
Yeah, I liked him coming over, and I expected him to do fairly well, too, and he did. I mean, nobody expected what's going on here. Now, how did you guys find out that he had stepped away? Because you traveled on Monday, I'm assuming, and you got to the park yesterday. How did you guys find out that he was leaving?
Yeah, actually, I mean, my interpreter let me know. We had a meeting because the manager was probably going to step away from the, you know, from his job, and so... Then we had a meeting around 2:30 when the manager came and talked to us, and that
yesterday?
Was kind of yesterday. Mm-hmm. That's when we all find out, and you know it was kind of sad to see the guy, you know, stepping away from his job, and I'm sure everybody kind of, you know, kind of feel kind of sad, but you know, keep going, and like you said, there's a long season coming up, so we better step up, you know.
I noticed over the weekend during the Carp series that he, a couple times after the game, he just really looked like he was tired physically and mentally about with all the losing. Did you get a sense change in his attitude recently?
Well, obviously, you know, it's not easy when the team loses. Everybody wants to win, and I'm sure he's the first guy that, you know, that wanted that. And then you got maybe some pressure from, you know, the office that obviously they want to win, you know, the ownership and stuff. So, you know, I think it's normal. Even the players, when we don't win, you know, we're not obviously happy. So, yeah, I mean, it was kind of like the atmosphere was kind of down, but it was, I guess it's normal.
Everybody down.
Yeah, right.
All right, well, what's wrong with the Buffaloes? We were looking at the injuries, and that's part of the situation. But you guys in, you know, close games and late-game situations have not been able to finish the job off. Mm-hmm. So what's wrong with the Buffaloes, in your opinion?
I think it's all a matter of confidence. That's, mm-hmm. you know, that's baseball. You get in a losing situation, and then it happens again. And if you don't get out of it, then you kind of, like, start thinking about it. It's like it's going to happen every time. So I think that's the main thing, just... We're not so confident right now. You know, some games that we probably would have won last year, you know, tight games, right now we're not able to do that. So, you know, that's the main thing, I think. That's the thing we got to overcome.
I agree. I've said the same thing, because it's not like you guys are losing the games of the bat. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're in the games. It's just that some plays you don't make, and then that costs you the game, and that could be the difference. It's a fine line, right?
Right. That's definitely. We're not getting blown away from teams. It's not like we lose, you know, 10-0. So, yeah, that's the main thing.
Now, what kind of guy is Fukuda, the new manager?
You know, I never really got to know much, just because usually he's more with the position player than pitcher, so, you know, but for what I've seen, everybody likes him, and he seems like a positive guy, so, you know, and he's been working with Moriaki, so he knows all of us already, and I think, you know, he's just kind of do the same thing Moriaki has been doing, I think. Just hopefully we're going to, you know, start putting some wins together, and the team is going to get some confidence.
Did he have a meeting with the players before the game yesterday?
Yeah. It was kind of short. He just said, you know, we're going to take game by game, you know, let's try the best we can. It was pretty short, but, you know, That's all you need to say? Yeah, that's all you need to say, I guess, yeah.
All right, now you started one game and you've mostly been relieving. How has the season been for you?
You know, I got to come up almost a couple of weeks in of the season. And, yeah, I've been mostly relieving. Then there was the start was actually like an emergency. Mm-hmm. Nishi, the starter, right, had a problem, so I was kind of like just kind of stepped in for him. I do like relieving just because I'm able to play more games in a week. I kind of hate the waiting for like a whole week to pitch. So, yeah, I really like this role, and I like when they, you know, they use me pretty often. I like to be in the game, so this is probably, you know, the thing I really like to do.
Last year in the second half of the season, and you were really good in close games and leverage situations down the stretch, and we like to see you pitching there. What about you?
Yeah. Moriaki really liked to use the bullpen, so, you know, I like that obviously because I had a lot of chances to play, and when I do that, I feel kind of like I get in a good rhythm. Mm. So that's probably what happened last year. You know, I was pitching regularly, and yeah, I was getting in some, you know, tight games, and I was doing the job, so, you know, yeah, obviously, I just like to pitch, you know. Whenever they need me, I just try to go out there and do the best I can.
Okay, now you guys have a lot of talent and a lot of expectations were on the team before it started. There's more than 80 games left, mm-hmm, to go. So what's the attitude, what's the approach going forward?
Yeah, we have a good team. It's nothing really changed from last year. Like I said, it's all a matter of confidence, so just got to put together some wins in a row. Now we got Kaneko back. Dixon is doing great. You know, if we have the other starters, Inishi is doing very good too. So, We just gotta get some wins. You know, tie games. We just gotta overcome the situation and get a win out of it. And then hopefully the confidence gonna grow up, and we're gonna go back to where we were last year.
I see you guys 15 under 500 at the moment. Let's say you get a good winning streak and you get back in. You're not that far away from, I mean, do you guys think about the playoff situation, or do you think still about the league title?
No, I mean, we gotta think more, and we gotta go for the playoff, you know, so we gotta start getting one game at a time and start from there. If you start thinking big, that's probably, you're gonna get lost, you know. If you see the distance you get from the top, that's probably gonna kind of bring you down. So just go by game by game.
Do you pay attention to the standings sometimes, or do you only when we in the press bring it up to you?
Yeah, actually, I don't pay too much attention, just because I know, you know, I don't want to see it actually, you know. let's go today, and then, you know, we'll see what happens tomorrow. So.
All right. Now, how do you like Interleague? I know the schedule is different. And how do you like the schedule this year?
Yeah, it's different, but, you know, it's a little maybe easier on the travel.
Mm-hmm.
I like it. I really enjoy to come to play this way. You know, we don't really come this way a lot, so it's new. It's different, and I like it.
What about the preparation?
Oh, preparation is about the same. I mean, you know, you just, you play against a team that you don't really know the hitters, but sometimes that's good. You just got to go for it, you know.
Does this team in particular bring a lot of data and go through every hitter and every guy on the bench?
Yeah. We do have meetings before every series, and they do bring a lot of data. So I think they're doing a good job, you know. It's just a matter of executing a little better maybe for us, for the pitchers, and also for the hitters.
All right, well, good luck the rest of the way, and we hope to see you better and higher up in the standings as you go.
Yeah, thank you very much, man. Thank you for having me.
All right.
Well, thank you, Alex. Good to hear from you always.
Yeah, thank you very much, Alex, for taking the time. We went into the mirror room, you know, when the other guys are hitting, and so it's nice and quiet in there, so it's not so bad. Of course, Itoi, my buddy, my favorite player, one of my favorite players in Japan, comes into the room, and he's working on his swing while we're talking. So it's real hard to concentrate.
Yeah, like, watch the back. Watch out for the back.
Well, no, you know, it is the visitor's mirror room, so it is tiny. But no, it's like, whoa, Itoi's getting some swings in. Didn't he just take batting practice? What the heck's going on? I mean, it was kind of distracting for me.
Well, if you're hitting 218, you'd be back there swinging too.
Hey, he's a batting champion, I have, you know, a defending PL batting champion.
Okay.
218, puh. He'll be back.
Puh.
He'll be
you
back
told
soon.
Him. You heard it here. You heard it here first, fans.
He'll
Puh.
Be back soon. All right. So what stood out for you?
Well, a couple of things. And I'll just say a couple of things. One is that, as I mentioned a few moments ago, I had a little chat. I had a chat with Brandon Dixon 2 days later. And it was funny. I think the foreign players have this line. What we need is to catch some breaks and play with a little more confidence. I'm going, wait, I've heard this before. And I think Alex said something to that effect when I spoke to him about a month ago when they had their first winning streak. I think they had their second today or yesterday. That was their third. Okay. We can count Rourke's winning streaks this season on three fingers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they seem to have the pattern down. You know, this is what this team needs. Okay, so that kind of stood out, yeah?
It struck a chord, huh?
It did indeed.
A familiar chord.
I think it was an A flat.
Hashtag high heat.
But the interesting thing, I guess, was to me is the talk about the manager. What do you think about Moriwaki? Because, you know, Oryx, you know, they're playing like the Oryx we all know and love, a team with full of talent but full of no direction, no identity. Maybe that's a good expression for Oryx, the team with no identity, the team with no face. And I'll get into that a little bit, but that's sort of what it struck me. I mean, he's talking about Moriwaki and, you know, what did he bring? You know, if you asked what did he bring as a manager, I guess. Was it you who said he lacks kind of fire?
No, I was the one who said that I heard from a player that he panics a little bit. That
okay.
He's a nervous Nilly sometimes.
I may have, maybe. Maybe he's a
He doesn't show it on the bench so much, but yeah.
Right.
Off camera and behind the scenes,
Could be, I don't know. But I always got the impression he's a very relaxed, very, you know, let the players play, let the coaches do their thing kind of guy, in a sort of non-threatening, non-authoritarian, non-Hiromitsu Ochiai way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that persona coming across.
So, you know, you know what to do, go do it. Now, the problem, as somebody indicated to me on Thursday, who watches Oryx very carefully, perhaps that managing type is a problem, mm-hmm. but that in this season, that managing type is a problem.
Yeah, I argued early in the season, and you laughed at me, but I said they don't know how to win, or they've forgotten how to win, or some statement like that I made. But that's what happened.
It's imprecise. I mean,
it's no science, obviously. We can't quantify it.
I don't know what it means to say you don't know how to win.
Well, I think it's what we heard today. It's that, look, when we get into situations in tight games that we had last year that we were winning, we lost confidence and we stopped doing the things that helped us win those games last year. And we don't have the confidence that you know this game, too. In any sports, if you're not confident, you've already lost. That is part of it, having some confidence. You know, not I think I can, but I know I'm going to is the greater approach that will help you have more success. It doesn't necessarily guarantee success, but if you don't have confidence,
if it did, it would be all those self, you're not. Yeah, if it did, all those self-help books would all work.
Yeah, that too. So
feel confident. Oh, great. Now that everything's fixed.
Yeah, I'm fine now. So they were in a funk. I think they got into a funk, and I think it was hard to get out. And just like Alessandro, I mean, he all but admitted that, hey, look, we had a bad start, and we didn't know what to do. We weren't able to overcome these problems that we've been having at the beginning of the season and win games. You know, we weren't able to make those close games and those tight ones and come back from deficits, and we're not able to do that. And so I think that's what we're seeing in the standings. I mean, you look at them, they're still not getting blown out. And we talked about this earlier in the season as well, when we talked about the Buffaloes before, about playing well but not winning. And I think that's what they did in that entire series against the Giants. They were, I believe, 3-1-1 games that they lost. They played well in the games. They just didn't win. They didn't do enough with the bats to win, and they obviously didn't do quite enough on the mound to win on the defensive side, but they were good games.
I thought the pitching was fine this weekend. It last during the week, but the batting was pretty horrid.
Well, yeah,
and the defense was mediocre.
Right.
And they're a good defense. They're a fairly good defensive team, and that's part of the problem. Right. So they should be a better offensive team, and that's part of the problem. So.
Well, I also like how he says he doesn't really pay attention to the standings, but that at the moment he doesn't want to. He'd rather not look at the standings because obviously they're not in a place where they want to be. And, you know, I think at one point they were 18 games under 500. They went to Nagoya, won 2 out of 3, so they're now 17 games under 500. And you know, I was thinking about even tweeting this. I said, I'm about to pronounce time of death on the Buffaloes. But I still think, because, you know, with all their bad outcomes of games right now, they're still 5 wins behind the Marines for fourth mm-hmm. place. And if they get there, then they can start looking up at third place. And I still think it's possible. So, I mean, those teams, we're talking the Marines 3 games under 500. That's not that far away. If they get hot, if they get, you know, they're going to have to obviously have a good stretch, especially in the second half. But I think it's doable. But I'm not sure about the – and, you know, I had never heard a player all but admit that they're looking to try to get third place. I mean, he didn't say third place, but he said a playoff spot. They're not really aiming for the title right now. And that's, you know, with 80-plus games – with 80-plus games, I've never really heard that said.
Well – I have, you know, I won't go into details too much, but I've heard that basically, in June, maybe not the first week of June, maybe the last week of July.
Okay. Well, that's what I mean.
But I have heard that, yeah.
But no, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Not with 80 plus ball games left to go.
Okay.
In terms of the Buffaloes, They went in to Nagoya on Friday, and rookie Sachiya Yamasaki got his first pro win, and they almost swept the Dragons. They pretty much had their foot on the tails, and they were about to take more swings with the bats and knock them off, and they had a bad inning, and they call it a pass ball. You could obviously see that Ito and Tsukahara, I think, was the pitcher, and they were crossed up, and Ito was looking for something on the inside and down, and they had changed the signs because there were runners on in scoring position, so they got crossed up, and pass ball got away, and the go-ahead run scored, and the Dragons ended up winning that game with help from Wada, from Kazuhiro Wada, who's approaching 2,000 hits. We'll talk about that in a little while. But, they competed better on Wednesday, but they still lost, and one of the things I found interesting was that Maestri says he doesn't really know the interim manager, Junichi Fukuda, and he doesn't seem like a talkative guy. And I asked him, and I asked Brandon Dixon, and I said, what did he say, or how long did you guys talk in the meeting before you guys played on Tuesday? And he said, not very much, and there was nothing really much to say. So one thing I took away from all the Bobby babble that I heard over the years, the Bobby Valentine stories, was you can't really evaluate your teams until at least about 8 weeks in, and I think we're past that point right now. So I'm looking at the Buffaloes, and I'm not seeing a revival per se. Like I said, I think they can get hot. They still have a lot of talent, but this new manager, I don't really remember that much about him.
Well, you wouldn't. He was barely knew him. He was a member of the Oryx. The Oryx Blue Wave Championships in 1995 and 1996.
Yep.
Played second base. He was a heck of a second baseman, a heck of an on base. He was in a group. The Pacific League had a bunch of really good second basemen at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of them. And he was one of my favorite players. And I didn't know this. I was reading a story online about him saying that he used to do some weird stuff. He's very soft-spoken.
Yeah.
And he doesn't talk that much. But when I spoke to him, I said, you were in Chiba about a month ago, because I was asking about the team, and he was there, and I'd never talked to him. So I introduced myself, and I said, I really enjoyed watching you play when I rarely got a chance to see him before cable.
Right, yeah.
I said, I really enjoyed, the kind of play that you did. And he said, man, he lit up, and we talked about the team for a few minutes, and he was like, is that all? Can I talk more?
Wait a minute. So you knew something was going down and that he was eventually going to be the interim coach. You were schmoozing back then. I see the game. Jim Allen, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, that was all part of my master plan to ditch Moriwaki, who liked me, for the head coach who might like me better. Yeah, that's all right. Yeah, pretty much. So anyway... No, I mean, I knew Moriwaki, and he and I get along fine. There was not an issue with that. I would have been – in any case, reading the story today, there's an episode where Fukuro put a watermelon on his head in the clubhouse, and I think this is when he was playing.
Yeah.
Sort of to lighten the atmosphere. Somebody put it on him, and he sort of ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
He says, I think I look like a worm. Maybe I need cucumbers in my ears or something. So he's not normal in the terms of the button down managing type. Uh-huh. And although I heard Moriwaki wasn't there either, I heard a story from Boomer Wells about Moriwaki.
Okay.
So in any case, Fukuro is kind of interesting. He's a little different. He was soft spoken, as I said. I don't know too much about what kind of manager. Of course, what I did notice is that almost the first thing I noticed was that the guy he brought in to close the game on Friday night was not Yoshihisa Hirano.
Right. And I really liked what he did with the bullpen. Like, not immediately, but eventually.
I mean, here's the guy who can't close because he's got a phobia, or he's got a bad – it looks like he's got a dead arm. Tatsuya Sato, and here he's the closer, and bam, bam, lights out.
Yeah, he looked a lot better, didn't he? Yeah,
he did.
Both guys looked different. Yeah,
yeah.
Hidano looked like the guy we had seen who got promoted to closer, and Sato, and I argued last year. I said, look, Sato should be closing, and Hirano should be throwing the eighth or the seventh even. He should be the setup guy because Sato is so good and so dominant and blah, blah, blah. And immediately, it wasn't the first thing that Fukuda did because they didn't really have a lead in Tokyo and they didn't have a chance to. But I think that was one of the things he had wanted to put his stamp on or something. That's one of the moves that it seemed like he wanted to make.
Okay. Now, let me make a couple of other comments. One was, I guess, one of the first things. Now, I didn't get out to Tokyo Dome until a couple of days later. And you sent me a text or an email in which said you mentioned the name Sotoguchi.
Yeah, yeah.
And apparently they were at Wayne Grassick said when he came out, or either it was Wayne or Jason, said, when he came out and talked to Hara and to Fukura, I guess it was Fukura and Hara at Tokyo Dome, all the cameras were going off, taking all the pictures of him and saying next Oryx manager. So anyway, I asked him and he said like, yeah, not on your Nelly.
Yeah, that was
in not so many words.
And I think I tweeted it that day. Yeah.
Yeah. And I asked him. Actually, I asked him if he'd be on the podcast and be a guest, but he said, no, I'm sorry, I forgot most of my English. 2 years ago, I hadn't talked to him much in a couple of years. And 2 years ago, I was shocked by how good his English was.
Yeah.
Since the time before I'd spoken with him when he was still playing for the St. Louis Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And anyway, he told me at that time, and he reconfirmed that he doesn't want to coach in Japan. He doesn't want to manage in Japan. Mm-hmm. That where he does, however, want to coach, but he wants to coach in the States.
Mm.
And that Tony La Russa, currently the general manager of the Arizona Diamondbacks, keeps calling him and saying, when are you going to come over here and coach?
Yeah, that's his former manager who he helped win a World Series title.
Yes, and who had a very high opinion of him when he was playing with St. Louis. And I asked Tony about – about 8 years ago. I talked to Taguchi and he says, Tony explains everything. I ask him, why did you do this on the bench? And he'll explain it to me and we'll talk about it. And I asked La Russa, he says, well, yeah, because he's like the only one who seems to show any interest.
Yeah, interesting.
So they had a good relationship anyway, moving along. But he said he wasn't interested. But what did strike me was he's working for one of the papers, and I think it's a Nikon Sports, he said. And he watches Oryx all the time. That's his job, watching Oryx. And he said that what his impression was the team lacks is not playing with energy. He said what we saw last year was a lot of guys on a roll playing with energy. Mm-hmm. And what he saw this year is a bunch of guys sitting around waiting for the roll to start. So they could feed off that and not realizing that sort of forgetting how they got there in the first place.
Hmm.
He said he was implying, I believe, that it was everybody was kind of working hard and it was something that sort of happened. I think it sort of happened because SoftBank lost a zillion games at the second half of the season. But, everything was going right for Oryx last year. It was the opposite of what's happening this year.
Right.
Yuki Nishida win 9 games to start the season,
eight games.
Okay, he won 8 games to start the season, and he wasn't their best pitcher of the year. And Kaneko was steady, and this went right, and that went right, and this went right, and this guy's a good player, and this guy's a good player. And Keiichi Hirano had a pretty good season at second base until he didn't, and Shunta Goto was having a breakthrough season. Everybody they put in the outfield was rocking. And this year it's like everybody's waiting for something. He said basically the guys are sitting around waiting for something to happen. They need to play with energy. And he picked on Shunta Goto and he picked on Itoi.
Mm-hmm.
So I said that's kind of interesting. And then when I looked at the roster, I said, like, who's hitting on this team? Well, Caraballo.
Caraballo's hitting the little rookie second baseman who's a
– Oh, yeah. Okay, well, that was the guy hitting. He said – Yeah, he said he's the guy. He's the only guy. He didn't mention Caraballo, but he said he's the only guy in there who acts like he's trying to be better. Everybody else is playing like they're waiting for something, like for the team to start winning.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, and I was putting what you told me or your spin or your analysis of this. I guess that's the best way to call it, an analysis, because that's appropriate.
Okay.
And what he said and what it occurred to me, it's not like they don't know how to win or they're playing well enough to lose, but what they're doing is lacking attention. You know, when I saw, and you know, it struck me, and when, as soon as he mentioned Shunta Goto, I thought of the night before at Tokyo Dome on the Wednesday night. They lost, they were tied 1-1.
One late in the game, yeah.
Yes, 1-1 late in the game, and there's a runner on second, and Shunta Goto gets a ground, gets a hot, somebody hits a little liner, looping liner to center field, and he comes in to charge it. You know, he's looking at the runner. He's not looking at the ball. And it doesn't gauge the hop at all well, and it bounces 10 feet over his head and rolls to the wall for an RBI triple. You know, a little soft single to center becomes a game-winning triple. And I thought, you know, that's what I've seen from Oryx. And I know that's what I get the feeling that that's what you're talking about, the lack of attention to detail, just not like paying attention enough.
Yeah. Well, in terms of, so Taguchi, yeah, I was out there on Wednesday, and he was there as well. And yeah, I did talk to Wayne Grosick, and I did see the cameras flashing and popping, and they did talk about him as a manager. And I immediately thought, well, no, they wouldn't. They're not going to change managers to a guy who's got no experience in a midseason situation. Now that might be this. He might be the manager of the future. He might be something that they think about. But then I started to go through in my mind that day and try to remember about all these managers who have taken over. Because if you go back to the Terry Collins years, and I think it was 2008 that he quit in the middle of the season. And then it was Daijiro Oishi took over. And then he was there in 2009, and then Akinobu Okada came in, but he also left midterm sometime. I think that was 2000.
At the very end of the season.
Yeah, 2012. And then Moriwaki took over, and now he's leaving in the middle of the season. So we've, you know, this is 2000, since 2008, so we've seen a lot of this.
Well, Oryx, it's sort of how, you know, I said they don't fire people, but Oryx, a lot of Oryx managers. Now, I know Terry wasn't pushed out. He was about the only one, because the team was kind of stunned when he left. He was angry with the team.
Right.
And the way they were, you know, the way they were managed. Right. But, you know, how many guys have left? I think Ihara left in the middle of the season. I think he was forced out once.
Yep.
I think Ishige was forced out and replaced with Leon Lee.
Yep.
Then they brought the general manager came in, and then that was 2004. And then at the end of 2004, they merged the Buffaloes and the Blue Wave to make merged the Oryx Blue Wave with the Kintetsu Buffaloes to make the Oryx Buffaloes.
Right.
And then they brought back Akira Ogi, and that was fine until he died.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't, they didn't, weren't able to replace him in the middle of the season. He wasn't any good by that stage anyway.
Yeah, they had a lot of change, a lot of turnover, a lot of turmoil on the management side, not just the player side. So I think it's that tumultuous situation that we're seeing manifest on the field, in that, you know, there's just not enough continuity and enough that organization pulling in the same direction. You know.
What I was thinking today when I was, you know, sort of like going over and thinking about Oryx was. What you said that's exactly what I was thinking. Oryx is a team which we've all talked about is always got players who can really play, but they don't play. Try not to make a silly analogy. They're a team full of talent, but they always seem to the players seem to be going each in his own direction. Sort of like I'm doing my best for the team, but without consulting the team. Right. And it's like the scouts are getting the best players, but not without a plan.
Right.
And the minor league is developing players without a plan. And the first team is using players without a plan. And that's what Oryx looks like. Now I have no idea whether that's remarkably anywhere near the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But when you we have this history of great talent and mysteriously bad performance, and that's the norm for Oryx. So what we're seeing this year is really what Oryx is all about. I hate to say that's really nasty, and I do to, and it's probably not fair because I know some of the people who work for Oryx, and I know some of them are really, really good, and they work their butts off, but things aren't turning out. Now, on a concrete level, what's wrong with Oryx? I would say the hopes for this season were so high, bringing in Eiichi Koyano, who was healthy in the spring, and Raiken,
right.
Hiroyuki Nakajima, Tony Blanco,
Brian Bullington, and they're all hurt.
And you know, the hopes were so high, and it was just crushed one after another. It was bam, bam, bam. And okay, could this team be better? Sure. Now, you know, Tony Blanco could get healthy. And if they have a lineup of a healthy Tony Blanco, Caraballo, and Okada in left field.
And Nakajima somewhere.
They
certainly had the makings for a quality team.
See, what's really disappeared is the offense. Yeah. This team cannot get on base to save their life. I swear, I saw Yoshio Itoi looking for like on base tickets at a discount shop. How do I get on base? I think he's forgotten.
They're like, get out of here, you stupid kid.
We don't take people with blonde hair around here. Go fix that.
Fake blonde.
Hashtag.
All right, well, we wish him luck. We've got to move on to different topics now, but we wish him luck, and especially with the manager situation. We'll see how that works out. With all due respect to Fukuda, I think they're looking forward to finding a leader.
That's the thing. And what I would say is that Moriwaki was not the man for this challenge. I think he lacks leadership in that respect. The team's going in 100 different directions, and what you need is somebody to say, not, oh, let's just all work harder, but, you know, this is the solution we're working for. I need you to do this. I need you to do this. I need you to do this. And if you don't do it, we'll find somebody who will.
Right, exactly.
And I don't think he was that guy.
Okay. All right.
As much as I like him.
As much as we both like him. All right. Making a four-seam transition into Interleague. The SoftBank Hawks have taken over the top spot. They have won 5 straight games. The Hanshin Tigers, who actually play on Monday night, they play the Fighters, and they're in third place. They're tied with the Lions for third place in the Interleague standings.
Okay.
And you know, I like what I saw from the Hawks in that 3-game series against the Giants at Tokyo Dome. And what I especially liked was that they won in different ways, right? They won by scoring a lot of runs. They threw a couple runners out at the plate on Saturday night in a 3-2 win. And so they did it with the defense and pitching. And obviously they did it with the bats too. So, you know, I picked the Marines. That was the hot team going in, and I wanted to ride them. And, you know, they're doing okay. But obviously the Hawks are the reigning Japan Series champions, and they're starting to play like it a little bit.
Yeah, well, that has, since Lee Daeho blew out the league in May. May.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they've played well. And Yoti Garashi said something to me the other day, which was that, you know, when he's not hitting, we're kind of looking over our shoulders, you know, waiting. And when he starts hitting, everything's all right with the world. I guess so far the surprise, and of course I'm not surprised that the Pacific League's winning most of the games. I did ask, I noticed something, and I posted it on Twitter, that the American League, which is the DH League in MLB, has a .525 winning percentage through 2014 in interleague play. That's through like 4,000 games.
Mm-hmm.
And the DH League in Japan, the Pacific League, right now is about .525. They have identical winning percentages. They've basically been identical for about the last 5 years.
That's scary. So leagues are better, is what you're saying.
I'm not saying that. So I asked Bill James, and his answer, I said, do you think this is a coincidence, this level of dominance? First he said, I don't think we can call .525 winning percentage dominance.
Right.
But that being said, I think it's just mere coincidence. Yeah, could be. So anyway, that was that. But they have essentially the same – they have identical winning percentages, and they've been stable for about the last 5 years, which is kind of interesting. Now, what surprised me is the Tigers playing well all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And the Bay Stars all of a sudden looking like, hey, you know what? We were in first place, and we're Yokohama. Get out. Let's get out of there.
Get out of here before somebody notices.
Exactly. Before they catch us.
And start putting pressure on us to win. Oh, yes. those stupid heavy expectations.
So everybody on that team thinks they're not supposed to win now, except Jose Lopez. Nobody's told him to stop hitting home runs and hitting well.
Yeah.
So, oh well, more power to him. Oh, that works.
More power to him. Ha, ha, ha.
Okay. So anyway, John mentioned, you know, the thought that the Pacific League pitchers might be doing better than the Central League pitchers. And I said, okay, well, we can look at that. And so so far, the Pacific League pitchers have outscored the Central League pitchers by a run. And they've driven in one more run than the Central League pitchers.
Only one more.
Yeah, it's 2-1 and 4 RBIs to 3. Although that changed today because of Hayato Terahara singled in 2 for the Hawks. So that's improved. Mm-hmm. And but the Central League DHs have been much better, which is bizarre.
Hmm.
The Pacific League DHs have 1 RBI.
One. And
yes, to 11.
One.
It's 11-1.
I'm flabbergasted. I didn't think it was that low.
Yeah, how did that happen? I don't know.
Wow.
But
one. These are through Saturday's games.
These are through Saturday. So, who drove in the run? Lee Day Ho.
He would be my guess. Yeah.
And that was a home run.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I mean, you know, you look at SoftBank and they've got 17 homers. You look at Cebu and they've got 17 homers in interleague play. And then, but the Marines are hitting the daylights out of the ball, 292. But they're not stopping people. Their ERA in interleague is 6.02.
Wow.
So whatever. Man. I mean, you know, and I've asked this question to two guys now about the preparation, and I'm not really getting the responses that I expect. And I'm starting to think, hey, man, they're just. I mean, even Alessandro said it a little bit. He said, well, you know, we just go out there and do what we do. And I'm like, okay, wait a second, wait a second here. That doesn't sound like a lot of preparation. I mean, yeah, they do have these meetings before the pregame, but. You know, the scouting and all that other stuff, is it really going on during interleague? Or because they made it fewer games, I think there's less importance on it.
Well, there's certainly, yeah, there's no economy of scale here.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, for 12 games or 18 games or however few it is, it's 3 times 6, it's 18 games, there's less, you know, if the less scouting you do, you might as well save that for the Central League or the Pacific League, you know, for your fighting against your own league.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe they have skipped on the scouting, but I wonder because it's always seemed to be, of course, Nakamura, I asked him why he hits so well in interleague, and he said, like, I don't know.
Yeah, he made a joke. He hit another home run, and now he's tied with Sho Nakata in the Pacific League, atop the Pacific League, with 18 homers, and he took the lead in RBIs. And I guess with the home run today, he's got 66 home runs in interleague, and he's the all-time interleague home run leader. 66 and 19, now it's 20. 20 of them have come versus Yokohama, and 14 he's hit at Yokohama Stadium. So he joked. He'd be leaving the Lions to go play for Yokohama because he's really bashing at that stadium and against that team. And then Kazuhiro Hatakeyama has really gotten hot for the Swallows, and he had 7 homers in 10 games before Sunday. And it's just, I love interleague, and I like seeing all these guys, you know, perform against the other team and the matchups and the breaking up the monotony and all that part I really love. But this aspect is interesting, too.
It is. And I think this approach is is interesting because, you know, you face five teams all year. You know, you play the bulk of your schedule against five teams, and all of a sudden now you've got three games against six other teams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are we going to do? Because the whole Japanese system is geared towards hyper-preparation.
Yes.
prepare, because we know who these guys are. We know who they are. It's knowing who they are, getting it, and so much it's the Japanese way of baseball is it's like a hothouse economy kind of model. You know, there's maximum energy going into these into each game. There's mm-hmm. the ratio of practice to actual game time is huge in Japan.
Yeah.
And the farther in the professional level, it's probably the lowest it is anywhere. And it's huge here. It's huge at the professional level, but when you get into amateur ball, you know, if you're playing high school ball, let's say you're an ordinary player, there's 150 kids in the high school baseball department. You're lucky if you get in two games in 4 years, but you practice, you know, 5 hours a day to play two games in 4 years. Yeah. That's normal.
Okay. Moving along now, another note, Tony Barnett of the Swallows on Tuesday notched his 22nd consecutive scoreless appearance to start the season, and that extended his league record.
Mm-hmm.
And although on Sunday that record ended at 23 because he gave up a run, but the Swallows still won, so congratulations to him for that.
That's funny. You know what's funny? Was I wasn't tuned into the streak, and I couldn't understand why when the Swallows won today –
uh-huh.
Tony was tweeting, "Time to start a new streak on Tuesday."
Oh,
I'm like, you won.
Yeah.
What streak are we talking about? Like number of times somebody doesn't hit you on the head. I'm thinking, what's he going on about?
Yeah, it's personal. It's personal for him.
It's personal. Wow. Yeah. It's not business. It's personal.
And then Kazuhiro Wada, we talked about earlier. He's closing in on 2,000 hits in his career. He's five away. So we expect by the next show, we can talk about him again and discuss his place in Japanese baseball history, but I'll give him a shout out here. He launched a pretty big home run today. And with his first year in Nagoya Dome, I think he made that dome look pretty small when he was
MVP. He said he had he said he didn't swing any different. The ball jumped off his bat that year. I think he did it for about 2 years. He did the amazing feat of hitting more home runs in Nagoya Dome than he did on the road. It's like not even T. Woods, as he was called in Yokohama, not even Tyrone Woods did that.
Yeah.
Tyrone Woods with about 60% of his home, about 45% of his home runs in Nagoya.
Okay. And then the performers of the month for May, no surprise, I think you got them all right. I was hoping that Ikuhiro Kiyota would be rewarded for becoming the fifth guy in team history to get 40 hits in a month, but they didn't take that into consideration. They just looked at the batting average. So you're right.
That's pretty rare. That you know, and the funny thing about that is they care about hits in a month. I couldn't give a hoot about hits in a month. Do you care?
I don't care unless it gets to be that number, because if you start to think about how many hits a guy is going to get in a season, if he gets 40 of them in a month, that's a huge number.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about guys who, you know, don't usually get 200 hits in a year. So if they're going to get 40 in 1 month, that puts them in really good position.
Fair enough. I basically discount hit totals. Like, you know, how many outs did he make? How many times was he safe?
If he got 40 hits and he walked a few times, then not many outs.
We had the case of Matt Merton setting the Japan hit record, but not leading the league in batting average.
Right.
So, okay, what's up with that? So I'm thinking, let's see, hit record. What's it worth? You know, I don't know.
Okay. All right. Let's go to fielding questions. All right. The first two questions are holdovers from last week, so we apologize. But Stuart, this one's from Stuart, and it came via Twitter, and he said, would the Carp ever sign a free agent reliever like, let's say, Rafael Soriano? And I say the answer to that question is probably a big never.
Never. Do you need another never in there, do you?
No.
Make sure I got some over here in case you need to borrow one.
No, it's a triplet. I don't see the carb spending high for somebody like that at this point. I know that Rafael Soriano's had his issues in the major leagues, and I think a lot of it was control. And that's not what this club does. We're talking about a guy who is broken, essentially, and needs fixing. But he's going to come with probably a high price tag. And some major league teams are still looking at him. And if you're bidding against major league teams, I just don't see the Carp getting involved with that. But maybe that's just me. And he's 35.
I think that's probably the biggest reason against the Carp getting him, because they tend to go for guys who are 30, or unless it's a short solution,
mm-hmm.
they'll tend to go for guys who are younger. But I think, a couple of things you said I absolutely agree with. I really can't speak about Soriano. I don't know much about him.
Mm-hmm.
I know he's an unemployed closer with a track record of some success.
Mm-hmm.
But he sounds like the kind of guy the Yomiuri Giants would have been all over on about 20 years ago.
Yeah, if he was worth it.
Well, no, if he was like, oh, he might be available, let's throw $10 million at him or something.
Mm.
The Carp don't pay top dollar, and the reason they don't pay top dollar is because there's plenty of quality to be had that's much cheaper.
Well,
they don't have to go out and get – I would bet you they could get somebody for a fifth of his price tag who's just as good.
Okay.
And Carp are pretty good at that. So that's they don't feel any urge to go out and spend a lot of money.
Yeah, well, they clearly need someone in there because they're not good at that particular position right now. Their setup guys are trying to close, and their closer – is not really closing.
Well, I don't know. Well, we did see Deontay Heath came back, and he gave up a home run. And first time back. I think it was his first time back. First time I saw him back, which is what really matters.
To both of us.
Yes, indeed. And I liked what I saw last year. The second year is always a little tough because people are ready for you.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see. I still think he can do it. I like his stuff. Okay. I'll leave it at that. I think he can get it done. I think he will get it done.
All right. The next question is from Coaster Freak, and he says, and this came again 2 weeks ago, so at the time that the question was sent, I think the Dragons were just 2 games under 500. But he says, what have been the reasons why the Dragons are competitive, despite being picked for dead last, 12 out of 12, hashtag high heat? And I think that was a little dig at me. But, I don't know what you would expect a last-place team to look like. Not all last-place teams look like the Oryx Buffaloes or what they're doing or the Hiroshima Carp. I think there's a fine line between winning and losing. And from what I've seen of the Dragons right now, nothing has made me think that they're not a last-place team. I still see them finishing last. The fact that the Carp have been in the midst of a very bad start, and I think the Tigers have struggled at times. The Swallows are not where we thought they would be. I think when it's all said and done, I think, and I'm saying this now, and when the question came in, the Dragons were in third place, and on Sunday after Sunday's games, they're in fifth place, so they're next to last, so they're almost where we expect them to be. But they've had the 3D trio of Hector Luna, Anderson Hernandez, and Ricardo Nonita have been really productive. Yohei Oshima is one of the best outfielders in Japan. He's been great. Ryosuke Hirata was leading the league in hitting before he got hurt, and he went out for a while, and that's part of the reason why the scoring went down and why they dropped into fifth place. But their pitching and defense, those things are not going to get lost, and those things are what make them very competitive. And right now, I have to be honest, I think they're doing the catcher skipper Motonobu Tanishige is doing a MacGyver job with making a house out of matchsticks right now with that team, because they really don't have that much. Yudai Ono has been good on the mound. Kazuki Yoshimi was good before he went down again with an elbow injury, and we don't know when he's coming back. I think I heard it was an elbow. Daisuke Yamaya is doing a really good imitation of an ace pitcher, but he really isn't that quality.
He's trying to, he's channeling Tadashi Setsu. He says, Sensi's an ace, and I'm almost as bad as he is.
Hashtag high heat.
I can be an ace too.
I can do that. But what are your reasons?
Well, I certainly, you know, I come at this from a completely different angle than you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't see them as being as bad as their record. And I'll tell you why, because they have some things they're really good at. One is they're really good in getting on base. They're extremely good at getting on base.
Yeah.
They're the best in the Central League at getting on base, and that shouldn't be happening in Nagoya Dome. So the fundamental part of the offense, which is not making outs, they're really good at. Okay, so let's start with that. They've got one thing that's the most important thing, and they're the best at it. Now, the other thing is they're very good at keeping opposing teams off base. Okay, so that's two things. Those two things are absolutely vital.
Yeah, they're fielding independent pitching. The ERA is 3.49, which is, I think, third best in the league.
Their pitching is a half empty, half full kind of thing. You know, as you said.
Yeah. I mean, some of it's predicated on the defense, but I mean, in their case, they don't strike out a lot of guys all the time. So
that is correct, and they have all kinds of little issues. They got the two big things right, and then a lot of the other things don't work. Okay, they're not good at turning double plays, but the Central League is like this: the Swallows are good, the Bay Stars are bad, and everybody else is in the middle.
Okay.
They hit into a lot of double plays. Now, Kazuhiro Wada coming back ain't going to help that.
No.
Despite the fact that they strike out a ton, of course, they have a lot of runners on base, but they do get into a lot of double plays. Their home runs are okay. They give up too many home runs for playing – way too many home runs for playing in the Nagoya Dome.
So how come they've been competitive?
Well, how come they've been competitive is because they do the two biggest things right, which is they get on base and they keep opponents off base. The problem is the pitching is up and down. You know, the starting pitching, Tomoya Yagi had his 15 minutes of fame.
He gone.
Yeah. It's like, wow, he's like he was as a rookie. Well, oh, okay, he was. He was pitching like he was the Pacific League Rookie of the Year again.
For an inning.
I would say from the start of March until pretty much the end of April. And then, wow, he's back to normal, which is, can we go below the Western League? Can we send him to the Shikoku Island League?
Yeah, I think that's where they want.
Like that.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, still a lot of things. I mean, Valdez looks like a good pitcher most of the time. He hasn't won, but he looks like a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah, he's kept him in games. Yeah, he's pitched really well. He deserves a better record, that's for sure.
Yamai probably deserves a better record, too. He's been really bad a couple of times, but he's been pretty darn good a bunch of times. So, you know, it's a weird team. They're a weird team in the sense that the Buffaloes and the Carp are weird. I would say they're much more like the Carp in the sense the Carp. Anyway, they're more like the Carp. I think they're a better team than their records. Their record looks. I think they're a better team than, say, the Tigers.
OK. And yeah, I think they're going to be better next year. But we'll have to see. All right. The last question comes from Doug, and he says, I'm a new listener / fan of NPB, and since it's interleague play at the moment, I was wondering if you guys could explain a bit of the cultural differences between the Central and Pacific Leagues, the sort of attitude the baseball establishment / Japanese fans have toward the two leagues. It seems the PL is more progressive, or should that be aggressive, than the CL in terms of PL TV, for example, constantly posting video highlights on the Twitter feed. And I'm curious why that would be the case. Are classic teams in the PL, like the Lions and the Hawks, considered less prestigious than the CL teams? And I was listening to a past episode of JBW, and you guys mentioned the 2004 strike and how there were discussions to amalgamate the PL into the CL, but nobody ever suggested the opposite possibility. Why was that? So we've got a lot of questions in there, but first off, the cultural differences between the Central League and the Pacific League, Jim.
The Central League, to put it very bluntly and overgeneralize, the Central League is seen as being the more conservative league. It's not always true. But yeah, that's how it's perceived. And primarily that's due to the Giants. The Giants have long, and the Giants owner, or I guess the guy who runs the Giants, Tsuneo Watanabe, basically has decided this is the way baseball is and this is the way it's going to be. And I think the Central League, I may have said it before on the show, the Central League, people expect the Central League to change dramatically the day after Tsuneo Watanabe dies. And I wish that was I wish I was joking, but it's true. Basically, right. they're waiting for him to keel over so the Central League can have a progressive marketing, joint marketing plan like the Pacific League. Okay, so that's that. The other thing is, as far as the strike goes, it's kind of, I don't want to get into that with the strike too much, because they weren't trying to bring this, they were talking about doing away with the PL, but they were actually talking about doing away with both leagues and making one league.
Right.
Contracting, you know, let's make it, they've talked about that a lot over the years. We've got too much baseball when in fact they don't have enough. But let's see, what else? Why is the Pacific League more aggressive? They've been the less popular league. The attendance for years and years and years was lower. But right now, the Pacific League attendance has grown and grown and grown and grown and grown and grown. The Hawks and the Fighters are very aggressive marketing teams. The Eagles are a very aggressive marketing team. The Lions, now that they're certain they're not going to be sold every year, have become a more aggressive marketing team. The Marines are a pretty good marketing team. They work together. They put a product out there. The Central League can't do it because of the Giants. They want to. The people who run the Giants, except for Watanabe, want to do it.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, that there's a huge doorstop in the way in the Central League, and it's the Giants. And then you look at the way the Pacific League introduced the playoff format. You look at the way the Pacific League decided to or pushed and pushed to get interleague going, as far as I remember. At the time, the stories that I heard when they introduced the idea of interleague was that, well, all the Central League teams want to keep the gate money from the Giants. They don't want to lose those home games against the Giants. Mm. And again, that was the doorstop. But somehow that got kicked open, and we've seen some growth. But yeah, I just think, you know, I always felt like the Pacific League was the little brother. And with the little brother, always wants to prove he can outdo the big brother. And so they come up with the different ideas and non-traditional ways. And I think that's just the way it has been. But I could be wrong.
No, that's accurate. That's accurate. They've basically been more aggressive because they've been underdogs. Yeah. You know, they had opportunities. They can be innovative because they have less to lose. The Central League, I think part of the reason why the Central League adopted a lot of the PL ideas, which it has, at first, what the standard pattern is, when the PL started playoffs in 2004, the Central League laughed. They went, "Ha ha, you bunch of dopes. You're ruining baseball. You're ruining baseball. Who would ever? We would never ever do that." And then 3 years later, they're saying, geez, we ought to ruin baseball just like the PL. They were jealous that the PL teams were drawing 30,000 fans between the third and the fifth place team in the last week, you know, the first week of October. They're going, we want to do that too.
Yeah,
we should but all we be can't so call it playoffs. We have to call it climax series, and we have to do it our way. And then they made it like the Central League invented the playoffs. That's how it works in Japan. And the PL said, okay, fine. We're good with that. You guys invented it. Be our guests.
Be our guests. All right. Well, be our guests to send a question to next week. And thank you to Stuart and Coaster Freak and Doug. And we appreciate it. And we're waiting for MP3 questions, guys. You can send us a 30-second to 1-minute MP3 question, and we'll play that. Send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat at JBW Podcast, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thanks a lot for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
Thanks a lot, guys. Talk to you soon.
One World Sports is the exclusive home of the Yomiuri Giants in North America and features live coverage of all Giants home games. Please contact your local cable provider to find out how you can watch One World Sports.